Welcome to What the Hex, where we cover Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 minutes. And a big happy 2019 to everyone out there. I'm Davey, and with me today, we've got Phil. How you doing,
hey.
Phil?
Doing all right.
And skulking in from the shadows and the crevices beneath the city is one each, Aaron Bowler.
Thanks for having me. And second of all, I do not skulk. I slink.
Slink, yes. All right. As always, we're glad to have you here listening. We have a Twitter handle at WTHcast. If you want to get in touch, let us know what we got right or wrong. And we are going to be covering today our take on the banned and restricted list. And you say, Davey, that is old news. And I would say, no, it's not. We're gonna cover the list from the perspective of having played, particularly in Aaron's case, many games with it.
so many games.
After some of the dust has settled we've got a lot of hot takes on it. So these are going to be our cold takes. Now that we're in the heart of winter, we're going to be, after we've had some time to grapple with it, make some lists, play some games, what we're thinking of it. So we'll cover that, impact that we think we've seen so far on gameplay, and with the concept of the banned and restricted list, what would we like to see in the future from that going forward. So that's what you can expect here. So cold takes, we ready for them, fellas?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
I didn't realize you actually wrote cold takes here. You're serious.
So serious. Clearly you haven't listened, but this is a very serious podcast. So sure. You can
stone cold serious.
Yeah. First up, banned. Three cards, easy to cover here. Time trap, quick thinker, great concussion. Anybody got one that is a standout to mention on this?
Well, I think that the two that are sort of the obvious problem child cards, quick thinker and great concussion, it's kind of obvious why those ones got banned. They just sort of were omnipresent. They're always being used because they're just that strong, which then makes time trap the interesting one to talk about. I don't know that it's hugely problematic from a gameplay standpoint, but I think it is one that was asked about a lot. It was very hard for people to understand how it interacted with the rest of the game. And so it's sort of interesting that it kind of feels like they took time trap out because they didn't want to have to keep working around it.
Yeah, it's from a not necessarily an overpowered perspective, but maybe just from a complication perspective is why it would have been yanked, which is a different way of looking at things. Every time I tried to use time trap, I feel like it always blew up in my face. So it's no love lost here. But I could see something that so fundamentally breaks breaks the rules of the game in some way. I could see why they would be quick to remove it, at least for the time being.
Right. I think it was, it's a powerful card, and it's frustrating and weird to work with. I specifically hadn't included in decks early on because I was not sure how it was supposed to work. And I felt like I might play it in a way and then there'd be a disagreement. I'm like, it's not worth it. You know, there's plenty of other cards I can take. So yeah, I don't think I'm sad to see that go. I'm definitely not sad to see the other two go, even as somebody who used Quick Thinker like all the time. It just was has so much versatility. Whether any kind of deck you're in, you could find a use for it. So, and it's a real feel bad card. So,
And just from my perspective, if we're going to talk about the ones that stand out, Great Concussion, I'm just glad to see go because I'm tired of having to include it in my deck just to counter other Great Concussions, kind of in the same vein as Earthquake. So now that I don't have to worry about it, I'm glad that I can remove that slot from my list and use it for something else.
And what was wild about it is that, like, it wasn't even that good at countering itself, right? Like, if somebody dropped it in the middle, you couldn't drop your own one in the middle. You just push them further apart. So it was tough to reset the board. So, yeah, I think with that one, I think they could have included that card and had it have a limited blast radius, like, pick a hex and then some number of hexes away from it and have that same sort of effect, and then it could still be in there. So maybe we'll see something like that down the line. But frankly, I think they're less engaging to talk about just because we're not going to see them anymore unless they decide to bring them back in some way at some point down the line. much more interesting to me are the restricted, because that's where a lot of the difficult decisions are happening on deck building. So let's talk about some, let's start with the restricted objectives.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I guess the first thing I think about is when I start to build a deck, I usually start with objectives, which means that a lot of times I'm immediately looking at this list as one of the first things that I'm doing when I start building a deck to think, how many of these do I really want to include? Since I only get five from the whole list, how many am I going to eat up in objectives?
Yeah. And what I've found is that it's easy to gobble up a bunch of your restricted slots here. And for anyone who doesn't know, restricted means five cards from any of these, total of what, 26, objectives, gambits, and upgrades. Only five off of this list can be in your deck at any time if you're playing by the abandoned restricted list, which, you know, you're going to see in tournaments, but if you're just playing in your household, that's, you know, do what you want to do. Yeah, it's easy to kind of eat up everything, and then when you come to your gambits and upgrades, be like, oh man, I wish we could have some of those back. But I think you're right, Phil. I think this is the first place you got to look, because your deck is almost, you know, you're defining your victory conditions in those objectives. So I think by and large, a lot of these felt like they were cards that were easy to score for not a lot of action investment. Like, there wasn't much gamble to them, and you could control them quite easily, and you know, they didn't take a whole lot of setup, some of them, at least with how the card pools went. Stand out for me as far as like Fired Up, you know, got restricted just barely into being developed, so it's a little bit surprising. But yeah, if it was not restricted, it's an auto take in almost anything, because somebody's going to get inspired in almost any list, right?
I wonder how far in advance, like, you know, that's an Eyes of the Nine card. How far in advance those cards were made before they knew they were going to make a banned and restricted list? Because it is kind of weird that, like, they printed it and then restricted it right off the bat. Maybe weird is not the word, but, you know, interesting.
Yeah, and what I've heard from other pages is that the GW development cycle is usually about 6 months ahead of what we see. So, and with this being a smaller, easier to produce game, it's probably a little shorter than that, but they probably still had a knowledge of what was coming pretty early on when they started coming up with this list, would be my guess. So in that sense, it kind of makes sense. But to us, it feels a little weird, because it's like, oh, these just came out, and now all of a sudden they're restricted.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I buy that. Things that stand out to me, just right off the cuff, there's a lot of score immediately's. They're not all score immediately's, but there's a chunk of them that are. So I think for those, you have to make sure that they're sufficiently difficult to score before, like, you can slap that score immediately category on it, which some of these aren't. I mean, they're not the easiest in the world, but they're easy enough that that the combination of score immediately and the ease of scoring sort of lends it to having them be restricted. Ones that sort of confuse me, or ones that I wouldn't have thought would have been restricted, are Perfect Planning. Was that being abused? The one where you scored an end phase if none of your fighters made a move action in the preceding action phase. Now, I understand that's not a super large amount of risk, just not moving, and there's other things that you can do. But was that,
I think,
being scored just pretty regularly?
I think that one is less of a, like, oh, so omnipresent, with the fact that it is used in the hyper defensive builds, and they must be discouraging that. And I'm not necessarily a fan. I think it's healthy for the game to have those defensive builds, even if, you know, some people might gripe or grumble against playing against them. I think it's good, because it forces people to diversify and say, like, I got to think about all these possible different matchups. So that one feels,
agreed, and that's almost an entire episode we could talk about, the how, you know, different types of play styles are good for the game. But so I agree with you there.
Same thing with Loner, right? Like, that's an oddball. I think I'd put it in the same, even less so than Perfect Planning, because it didn't have time to kind of fill in that. So that comes back to maybe this idea that they were seeing something in playtesting. They said, we probably better stack this in. I don't know.
Gotcha. Another one that stood out to me is Alone in the Darkness, in so far as like that's something that your opponent can actively like sort of get in the way of. Like they have some control over it, whether or not you can score it.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of these other ones, maybe they don't necessarily have as much control. So I would have thought that maybe this wouldn't have been restricted because, I mean, I know the occasion where I played Davey, like he's always thinking about, well, I got to make sure I place my folks in such a way that Aaron doesn't score Alone in the Darkness on me. So maybe it's because I play just a really good opponent in Davey, but I would have thought that most people would be able to like play around that one.
Hey, Phil, can you get on board with this flattery train? Aaron's going to take over your spot here if you...
Well,
I'm coming for your seat.
To vamp on the Alone in the Darkness, I think you're right in that one is a little easier to play off of. But one thing that I notice in a lot of these, and having played hyper defensive Stormcast myself, I think they're trying to take some of the passive play out of the game. Hyper defensive Stormcast strategy prior to the list coming out was basically load up on these super passive objectives where I don't have to actually do anything and I can automatically score these, and I'll just sit on the very, very back edge of the board and hopefully go first for board, well, win the roll off. So I'm placing the second board so we can play hallway, and then your opponent, unless they're also doing the same thing you are, basically is sort of playing a non-game, because you're like the first round and a half is just, I'm just passing or drawing cards. Mm. And it's sort of I think it's not where they want the game to be. And sure. I think that's where some of these cards are coming through. So things like Alone in the Darkness or Perfect Planning, where it's not so much that it's being abused, but that it goes kind of against this arena combat style of game, that it's like, well, we're going to tone that back a little bit because we don't want turtle builds to be as effective as anything else.
Right. Well, and I think when you say passive scoring, I think you're correct that like, and it's more than just the defensive, like advancing strike, score immediately, getting somebody in enemy territory, defensive strike, score immediately, getting somebody in your territory, one glory each. They're not passive in that you're having to do something to make them happen, but they're passive in that, you're scoring them for things that you're just totally going to do anyway. You know, if you have a deck that's going to fight, so you're not having to do anything different. And one of the things I like about playing this game is when you've got kind of a wonky objective in your hand, like I don't know, like if I've been playing with Crushing Force or the bigger they are, so like things that I need to overkill somebody or need to kill them with a one damage attack, and so I'm making like suboptimal actions if the only goal was to take enemy fighters out. And so the person on the other side said, well, why is he doing that? It's weird. And then trying to figure out what I've got. And that's the fun back and forth when it's just, oh, I'm just going to pop a guy in enemy territory. Well, less exciting. Doesn't take as much thought to pull off.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking, before we move on, the one that I think is sort of maybe going to need some additional attention is Extreme Flank.
Yeah.
And I think it's just problematic in how they FAQ'd how it works. I think it's good that it's already restricted, but it's already so easy to score with that FAQ. For those who don't know, you just have to have two fighters on opposite board edges that are the furthest opposite edge, but that can mean with certain board setups that you're just on the opposite sides of your own board and you score two glory, and it's just kind of like that's maybe a little too easy for how much you're getting out of it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right when you're scoring Extreme Flank and you are scoring it off of the two board edges that are closest together. Like that's probably not how this is intended to be written. It was accidentally written that way and they felt obliged to FAQ it exactly as it was written, which, you know, I get it.
Guys, real quick, I need to go back and change my list real fast.
you still got at least 26 hours, right?
Yep, exactly.
All right, well, objectives kind of covered there. Gambits, only 7 of them on there, which it's the smallest group. It's almost a little surprising because it feels like often the most competitive category. But maybe that is why, just because there's so many good ones that bounce.
Well, and plus the banned ones are gambits too.
Sure, good point. Good point.
Definitely.
Of these that are restricted, there's the easy extra damage ones: pit trap, trap, and twist the knife. And we'll talk about this more when we cover reactions. But reactions in themselves are powerful because, and particularly these ones, because you're never going to waste them because you can see if you're going to get that extra damage. You hold that card until you know that you're going to get the extra damage, as opposed to something like I think Lightning Blow might be the Far Strider one that's plus one damage to your next attack action, but you don't know if that's going to be successful. And because you're tossing three swords, man, it is going to break your heart and burn your ploy. These ones are not guaranteed necessarily, but you can make sure that they don't get played unless they're useful.
Definitely. And I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily true, but there's a lot of talk about how they're trying to lower the lethality of the game in general to just have less damage modifiers. And by restricting these, you can pretty well guarantee that there's only going to be a few hanging around anymore. And I think overall, that's probably a good thing. One hit kills for every attack, even from lower damage fighters, is maybe not the best, because it makes defensive fighters that aren't Stormcast feel like they're not really all that defensive anyway.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I guess the other thing you see them placing a premium on here is the action economy. So my turn and ready for action, giving you, a free attack or move based on certain board circumstances, which are relatively easy to have occur. So one extra attack over the course of a game that has only 12 activations, it's essentially, an 8% increase in your list efficiency, if you want to put it in those kind of terms. So I think those are pretty accurate. I think you still see those quite a bit, even though they're on the restricted list. I find them just to be powerful enough. So we'll see if they go elsewhere.
What do you guys think Illusory Fighter is on this list? What about it is broken?
I don't know. I love that card. I'm not exactly sure. I feel like it might have been an edge case on here. I mean, it is crazy because you can leap in with Scritch or whatever, take your poke, and then automatically get yourself back to safety unless somebody my turns or something like that. But it can also be used to, move rapidly to protect your own board. Or I've used it to, kind of turbo boost. You got someone at the back of your board, Illusory Fighter them to the front of it, and then they can charge someone that thought they were out of the way. So, which is all to say, I think it's a deceptively powerful card, but I don't know whether or not it deserved to be on here. Hard to say.
From my perspective, there's plenty of other like movement shenanigan cards, like Hidden Paths and there's other ones, but that like they all like sort of contribute to the mobility like of the game. And so I don't know, I would have thought that would have been something they would have wanted to encourage and not limit, but I don't know, who's to say?
I think maybe part of why Illusory Fighter gets on here and something like Hidden Paths doesn't, or even something like Spectral Wings, is because those have limitations that are very clearly defined. Plus two move is good. It's going to make just about anybody fast, and it's going to make fast fighters crazy. But going like seven hexes is still not nearly as much as jumping from one end of the board to the other. And then with Hidden Paths, although you can also jump around, you have to start on an edge hex and end on an edge hex, whereas this is from anywhere to a starting hex in your territory, which I think, as Davey mentioned, there's just so much utility in not having to have a setup. It's sort of just like a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's like, oh, I messed up on my movement. Now I'm just going to play this to save myself. Yeah. I think there's a lot of premium on that.
I think because it doesn't give you a move token, maybe. I mean, I think that's what because you can then move freely afterwards, I think is maybe what kind of pushed it over. So
yeah.
as opposed to Hidden Paths, which is very powerful and is, feels a little surprising to have not seen on here if Illusory Fighter made it. But and the last thing I'd say is Earthquake, although I frankly, after the oppressiveness of Great Concussion, like Earthquake, oh, who, no big deal, like, that's fine, have that on there, whatever. I think it's still good to have, if a card is affecting the entire board state, the positioning of the entire board, yeah, I think it probably is valid to be on here. And we'll see, you know, if it moves or not. But I like that as a default. If something's affecting the whole board, it should be at least considered for this list.
Yeah. Well, and it's a great, you know, certain lists, it's going to affect much more heavily than others, but it's a great disruptor card. So if you're trying to plan for a lot of strategies, it can be one that you're just like, well, I'm just going to throw it in there because, you know, a third of the builds, it's just going to totally screw up.
Mm-hmm. So until I play my own Earthquake.
Right.
But that's also, you know, another point of why it's good to be restricted, because now you're making people bring a restricted card to counter a restricted card. And when you're limited, and well, you're not exactly limited in how many cards you can take, but you want to be careful in how big your power deck is, because mathematically you're going to start to have a hard time getting the cards you need if you're bringing a whole bunch of stuff. It's like, well, this will counter that and this will counter that.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are the gambits. Anyone else got anything they want to throw in on those? Or should we move on to the upgrades?
I guess if you want to hear more about Earthquake, you could go back to our Push Ploy episode and hear us talk about that one in some additional detail from a different sort of perspective.
Good point. Episode one. Check it out. Upgrades. 9 of them on there. Any quick thoughts on any of these ones?
My quick thoughts is I'm surprised they're able to come up with 9 upgrades that they wanted to restrict.
I'm honestly surprised about Helpful Whispers. I mean, sure, it gives you like a free support all the time, but is that really? I mean, I guess it's adding a pretty statistically significant increase to your chance of succeeding on an attack, but it just, I don't know. It just doesn't feel that strong to me. I don't feel like I was seeing it used to huge detriment a lot.
Yeah, I would say Awakened Weapon and Helpful Whispers both are, I included them both with some fair frequency, but I have not glanced at them again since building decks. There's just too much other competition for these restricted slots, so that does seem a little overkill to have them on there. I will say, seeing A Destiny to Meet, Slumbering Key, between those, it made me re-examine. I had fallen a little bit out of love with Grizzly Trophy, Garrick Gorebeard's plus one glory for every kill. I was like, like he sometimes dies. And that's the thing. If you are saying that a powerful upgrade card is one that earns you one extra glory at the end of the game, as soon as Grizzly Trophy earns you one extra glory from one kill, then it's as powerful as one of these, right? So it made me remember why that card is so awesome. So that was kind of an example of the restricted list making me reexamine other cards and say, oh, right, you know, there's more value than I'd remembered from some of these.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, and like you said, it requires a little bit more risk, but maybe the payoff is bigger in the long run.
Sure. I mean, in that particular example, you get the glory at a time that you can use it, i.e. before the end of the game. And you could get more than one. So I think, yeah, it's a higher risk, higher reward version.
But the nice thing is that at least for, I think it's just in Garrick's and Magor's, they both have it. But either way, I mean, it's rewarding you for probably what you're wanting to do with those lists anyway. Mm-hmm. You're sure. Probably just trying to chop people up. So if you can eke out a few extra glory through not having to change your strategy in any way, that's probably really strong.
Right.
And I guess that kind of brings up another thing I was thinking about, where obviously these are all generic. And I think that makes sense because you're trying to limit all builds, not just one particular list, but some of these things exist in faction-specific cards, and those will never, or at least as of right now, are never going to be restricted, but they have the exact same function. So it sort of adds a lot of value to those cards, because it's like, well, if I was bringing Soul Trap before and I'm playing Dwarves, I've got that already in my deck. And it's not restricted. So right. I can bring that.
About Grimnir's Fortitude? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
All right. but or Gurzag's Unkillable, right?
Right. So,
yeah, so I will say that these upgrades so far have been the last place that I've been willing to spend my restricted slots. But I guess talking about that, we've kind of covered a lot of this already. But so those are the cards, but the impact on gameplay, the most obvious spot is deck building, because it's where you're working on it. Have you noticed any big change in the way you build your decks, other than the obvious compatibility check at the end, like how many did I accidentally take?
For a lot of the decks that I've been working on lately, which is for Eyes, for the tournament coming up, and trying to figure out a Garrix deck that I'm happy with again, it hasn't really been a factor too heavily. I have been focusing a lot more on the objective cards in both of those decks than in the other cards. But most of the strategies that I'm going for don't require that I have all of these. Now, admittedly, if I could bring more of them, I probably would. I'd probably throw Incredible Strength in a Garrix deck just because. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like it's necessary. So in that sense, it's kind of like, well, I'll just skip over it because I see it's restricted, and then go about my business as normal and not really be agonized over having to choose.
Yeah, so what I've found is that there's some things that it makes me look at different factions in different ways. So with the reduced lethality, it, you know, and on the one hand you're thinking like, oh well, you know, maybe these high wound like Magors or Cursebreakers or Steelhearts, maybe they go up in value now that there's less lethality out there. The flip side is you look at the cards that are filling the gap, like Glory Seeker. It's the plus one damage on a target that has a wounds characteristic of four or more. I'm like, well, you know what? If I am playing as Zarbag's Gits, Goblins, that's a dead card against me. I don't have anybody with more than four wounds. Joke's on you. You can kill me already. So it's funny how some of these cards you can think about, well, here's a way I can make some of the opponent's cards dead, basically, with how I select my deck. Similarly, now I feel like you got to think a lot more about objectives, right? Like, is somebody going to run a hold objective? Like, I'm going to get all my glory from grabbing particular objectives or particular combinations of objectives. And
no one would do that.
Never. No. Not a soul.
No. and what's fun is that, okay, now I got to start thinking, do I need to have ways to bump people off of objectives more so than just running up and hoping I hit them?
No, you don't.
How about in game, like in the flow of a game, have you noticed any change, one way or the other?
Well, having played you a lot and your, tendency to bring both a quick thinker and great concussion, I've noticed a significant improvement in my quality of life.
Yeah, we had some pretty awful games where Magors were not getting to swing at anything. For me, what I've enjoyed is kind of counting out the restricted cards as I see them. Like, okay, there was a restricted objective. Okay, there was a restricted upgrade. And so you're like, all right, probably not in the first game, but maybe in your second and third, you can say like, all right, I don't think I need to worry about Trap or Twist the Knife, because I think I've seen all these, and I'm seeing more distinctly the way they're headed. Whereas before, even if somebody wasn't combat oriented with their deck, it's still probably a decent chance they had, you know, trap or something like that in there, just because it was such a powerful card, and it didn't cost them anything. So what I've enjoyed is, you know, that aspect of trying to count out the restricted, but also just like seeing the innovation that this shakeup has created. So
sure. From my perspective, and I don't know, maybe Phil doesn't want to hear this, but I don't know that I've ever created a very fighty deck. And so with the decrease, as we've talked about, in lethality, it means that maybe my dudes aren't dying as often, which is fortunate. And then in terms of like the deck building side of things, like we said, a lot of these cards are sort of focused on the lethality, or they're focused on the hyper defensive, but maybe not as much on the like the avoidance type deck that I like playing. So like there's just like a slim number of cards on this list that I do want to continue to add to my decks, and like I don't really care about much about the other ones for the most part. So it really hasn't affected the way I've been tooling my lists either. But my goal typically is to try to approach it from I don't want to say unique, because other people are doing what I'm doing, but an alternate play style. And so that I don't know that this list has restricted me from doing that as much.
Fair. Well, all right. So we've got that impact. What about going forward here? This idea of having a banned and restricted list for the game. What do you think? Is it something that, A, do you think they're going to look at it annually? B, do you think they should look at it annually or on some more frequent basis? And C, if they are doing so, what criteria would you like to see them considering for this sort of thing? Let's go with Phil first. Bang, bang.
Well, I think it's a great idea. If you're familiar with Magic the Gathering, you know that having a hyper-competitive game with such a huge available list of cards means that at some point there's going to be either unintended interactions or there's going to be problematic cards that were not necessarily fully vetted before they were released. And you need to have some way of fixing those things if you want to keep a competitive game scene alive, because otherwise you will quickly see the hype, like champion lists will quickly narrow down to those one or two super, super competitive lists if you have those problematic things sticking around. And I think we touched on this in our sort of prep for this, that the end of season one sort of felt like everyone was just running these cards, and it felt like a lot of the variability in decks was going away from the game, because it was kind of like, well, why would I bring anything else? These are all really, really good, and I can do really well just by bringing these. So I definitely think it needs to be kept up if they are expecting this to be the ultimate competitive, like, board game or whatever they bill it as. And then whether it's yearly or more frequent, I'm not sure. I think that kind of depends on how often the new releases are. I think at the current pace, yearly would probably be about right. They need to be able to gather data from tournaments. I think that's really the best way to figure out which cards are problematic, and they should probably, as I think they've been doing, ask for feedback from the community, hear what people have to say. If people are complaining about one card in particular from a lot of different places, that's probably one that should be looked at. It's you know, it's not super hard. They don't have to go out and figure it out. Just let people tell you that are playing the game, you know, let them let you know this is a problematic card and you should look at it again.
Yeah. First I'll just respond to a few things from Phil's perspective. First, when you say that when these cards exist, like those deck lists are going to continue to sort of perpetuate and continue to be utilized by, you know, everybody. But just by restricting these cards or banning these cards only means that, like, the next, I'm predicting that it's only going to mean that the next set of cards, the next best cards, are then going to set the standard for what those decks are going to be. Now, maybe that introduces a slim amount of more variability out there, but I don't know that it's a guarantee that by going down this route, we're going to then get more variety in decks. maybe it will, maybe it won't, but I don't know that it's a sure thing. Whether or not it's worth trying, I guess I can't say, but there's always the second best and the third best cards that people are still going to, you know, suss out and figure out what the ideal deck lists are. With that being said, going into this episode, I was all geared up to be sort of anti this banned and restricted list. To my mind, I was kind of hoping that they could approach balance from maybe more of an addition, like as opposed to subtraction, a little bit more addition instead of, you know, banning things. But as time goes on, introducing new cards, whether they're equally as good or they interact with some of the worst cards to make them better or what have you, to sort of balance out the available, you know, card pool by adding stuff to the game that maybe diversifies play styles or what have you, instead of just blanketing, you know, banning some cards or restricting others. However, the more I thought about it, the more I guess come to the realization that it would take a long time, I guess, to introduce those new balancing measures if they're going to introduce new cards or new rules or new war bands that are interacted with cards in a different way. That might stretch out for a little bit, and it would, you know, take a soft touch, and as time goes on, it would sort of be a prolonged process. And if they do want to introduce a hyper competitive game, I think it's in their best interest, yes, to go in and start, you know, banning and restricting cards as necessary, at least in the short term, until they can build out that card pool or that warband pool, and sort of approach it from both ends, both from an adding versus subtracting perspective. So I think I've maybe convinced myself that it's not the worst idea in the world. Again, given infinite time, maybe they could have had a softer touch about it. And I guess that's what the restricted list is sort of a soft touch. Sure. So I guess I'm still for it.
It's available to change. I think the game has been at its most exciting when new elements are still getting shaken out. And so during a season when new war bands are arriving, new cards from whatever, new boards, or whatever the case may be, that's exciting. There's new stuff. People are figuring out the interactions, and it doesn't feel like it settles. It did feel like once that dried up at the end of season one, things got stagnant, and then that's when it got less interesting. So I think this is a nice way of, you know, figuring out how to shake things up a little bit when you're sort of in between, when you have a little bit of a drought in between releases. Ironically, with that being, this one did not drop during one of those times, you know, but
that's what I was going to say. With that being said, was it just mistimed a little bit, and that they could have shaken things up by just introducing the new war bands as opposed to introducing the banned and restricted list?
Yeah. And then again, it goes back to that question mark of how far out were they planning to do this? Because I was thinking with the arrival of the new stuff, that would shake things up, but I think they maybe saw that it wasn't so much. Like, it's still a lot of the season one, you know, decks had only changed nominally from what they looked like at the end of season one. And it's hard to say, was that people didn't have enough time to really explore some of the interactions or not, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's just for the excitement it generated and all that, it's been healthy for it. Yeah, I don't know. I think I like that there were only three banned. They kept that list small, so I think that's good.
Yeah, that's a redeeming factor for me, is that the ban list is so short.
Definitely. And I think it maybe is worth mentioning that, you know, these kinds of lists are never needing to be set in stone. Now, whether they'll actually revisit them or not, I don't know. But I would hope that they would be willing to go back and say, hey, maybe we were wrong on this card, and remove it from the restricted list. And be willing to shuffle things in and out as they see whether or not it was a problem. If it going onto the restricted list means that it disappears from all decks everywhere, that might have meant that really its stock wasn't all that strong to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I would like that level of flexibility.
Sure. You can tweak it, go back and forth.
Just like a Magic banned list. And to the timing, I think they've already shown that they're willing to approach things from like a yearly perspective in some of their other games, and so I don't see why this would be any different.
Sure. With the idea of looking towards the future, if I said, you know, basically, give me a card that you'd like to see come back off, give me a card that you'd like to see go on the list, and if you want a broader idea what the criteria should be for putting a card on there, what would you select? And I'll throw that to whichever one of you thinks you can answer that?
I knew the question was coming, and I still didn't prepare an answer. Things that I would want to get rid of, maybe I think Illusory Fighter is something I would yank just because, I mean, it's selfish. It's just, it fits my play style, and I want more stuff like that. So by no means is it necessarily from a good of the game perspective. Go ahead.
I do like playing that card and saying, and he was never really there. It was an illusion.
You do say that a lot. Illusion, Michael. And I don't have, nothing comes to mind, mainly because to begin with, I was maybe initially anti-ban restricted list from the first place. So I don't really have anything that I want to get added to this list, at least until after the tournament. And then I'm sure I have all sorts of cards that I want to tear up and burn.
I would say, as far as adding to it, I think we might see that you, in the same way that they have great strength and incredible strength, only incredible strength is restricted. Maybe restricting one of either Deathly Fortitude or is it Sudden Growth? Basically, the two cards that are plus two wounds, minus two move. I think we're seeing them stacking off a lot, and I'm not. This is why I'm glad it's not necessarily going to happen soon, because I think there's a whole lot to be played out. There's so many cards that could explore how you manage. You know, as the more you slow down a fighter, then you've got one real hard to kill but stuck in the middle fighter, and so how do you manage that? I don't know. I think we have a lot of ways to go, but I could see that being a possibility, and that's a relatively soft way of reducing that huge wound stacking that we might see. As far as something to come off, it's not very exciting. Since Aaron stole my Illusory Fighter, I think Alone in the Darkness. Now that Great Concussion is gone, it's a lot harder to score. And if it's out there, there is a fun, instead of saying, well, if he's got Great Concussion, he's basically going to score this no matter what. It's a fun card to play against and have in your mind to say, okay, like, how can I play my turn to make sure I'm denying Alone in the Darkness, whether, you know, and not even being sure that he has it or not. So those would be mine.
Yeah. So for the one that I think is, I mean, there's a few that I think they're a little weird on here, but the one that immediately comes to mind that I would maybe take off, Loner just seems like maybe one that they were anticipating being problematic or anticipating being used a lot in the passive play. But honestly, unless you're planning for it, I'm not sure how often I've had fighters that are just sitting three hexes away from all other fighters by themselves.
That's a pretty big dead zone. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when I first read it, I was like, oh, that sounds pretty easy to score. But actually having played with it a few times now, it's a little harder than you'd think unless you have really fast fighters. So, it just feels like maybe it's not that bad. So I'd kind of like to see that one come off just to see if it would actually get some use. Cause it's one of those ones with like Fired Up that it really wasn't out for very long before this list came out. So I don't think people really got to try it before it went on the restricted, which may mean that it now doesn't get used very much at all. Which I think is maybe one poor thing with the timing, is that there were some new cards that are already restricted, which potentially turns people off from trying them out.
Okay.
And then something that I think maybe could be added. So if Escalation is supposedly problematic, I think that things like Singled Out or Chosen Champion can be equally problematic. They're less points, but it's also fairly easy to score. You just have to have three upgrades and one fighter. And I mean, while Escalation is a little easier than that, because it can be three played from, you know, any player, it has to all happen in one action phase, whereas Singled Out or Chosen Champion could happen over the course of the whole game, and it's pretty passive. Like, you're going to be putting upgrades on fighters anyway. So if you're sitting on two and you have one left over at the end of the game, just go ahead and throw another one on there. It's really easy to score, and
I guess
it's pretty hard to counter.
Sure, it does feel like it fits the archetype of what they targeted with a number of those objectives, right? Like, just do what you're doing anyway sort of thing.
So. Yeah. I think Quick on Your Feet is kind of in the same vein. It's like, just move all of your fighters, and a minimum three. So, you know, Farstriders making moves doesn't sound all that hard to me.
I don't quick on your feet. It's you scored if all your fighters
scored. Scored in an end phase if all your friendly fighters made a move.
Oh, interesting.
It's a passive version of the one from Sepulchral Guard, but okay. It can be as minimum, you know, as low as three fighters doing it, which means if you draw that in your opening hand, theoretically, that's just free glory. I don't know what your opponent's going to really do about it. So it feels like one that's like, yeah, that's also sort of in that kind of passive vein where it's like,
yeah, I guess you'd be
just going to get this
out of luck with like Magor's or not Magor's with, I mean, you have to take all four of your actions to charge or move there. Like Reavers or Rats might have a tough time with it. That's about it, right?
Right.
Because they wouldn't have enough. But yeah, that's an interesting one. All right. Any last thoughts on the banned and restricted list, gentlemen?
Nope.
Hearing none. We'd like to thank you for listening to us here. It's What the Hex. You can get us at WTHcast on Twitter or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Aaron, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, where can you be reached?
Smoke Signals, Carrier Pigeons, and at Dosaceos, DOSACEOS.
Cool. And I should say, Aaron is a host / editor-in-chief. I don't know why I've assigned that title to you, but of the
I'll take it.
Mortal Realms podcast, which is the other gig I do. You should check that out. We've got a lot of new content coming out over there. Specifically, as mentioned, by the time you hear this, there should be an episode out already about The Mirrored City, the Josh Reynolds novel covering some of the background from Shadespire. A very entertaining read.
Yeah, check out www.themortalrealms.com.
Yeah. You can catch us on this stream in a couple weeks. We'll be talking about the lists that we've put together for WAPACA. There is a tournament going to be about just shy of 20 people, depending on any late ads or drops, and we'll be heading there and trying our hand at a larger tournament than most of us had the opportunity to play in before. Thanks for listening. All right.
Does us playing the three of us count as a tournament? Only the goblins in the computer will know.
Yeah, right. Gerblins. All right, so we're going to do...
Here there be gerblins.
Band and...
How's prepping for PACA going?
I wouldn't know because I ain't doing it.